Hi there, everyone. Welcome back to the next episode of our podcast. And I am here today with Adam Birkid from NPM and UTC.
Yeah, that's me.
So, good morning.
Hello.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting us. So, for people who are listening and watching, what I want to do is find out, first of all, a bit more about you. Obviously, you're a local chap.
I am. Born and bred.
Then we'll find out a bit about what led you to run this company.
Yeah.
And what your real passion and talent is, which I know is music.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will talk about what you love to do around Northwich, you know, the wider area where we all live. Yeah. And then we'll cover off a few things about the business and the challenges that you face that any small business owner faces.
Sounds good.
So it was your birthday due on Sunday, wasn't it?
It was 2 days ago. I'm still a little bit jaded.
We had a couple of drinks in
my favourite local pub, the Famous Stones, yeah.
Yes.
And a few mates came out and had a drink, yeah. But yeah, I've grown up around here, so I know the area pretty well.
Yeah. So you were born in Leighton, were you?
It wasn't, no, I was born in London.
Okay.
I was born in East Dulwich in London, but I lived in London until I was 18 months old. Because my mum and dad are both from this neck of the woods. My dad's from Preston.
Yeah.
And my mum's grew up in Wilmslow. So
okay.
They were always wanted to have a family up here, so I was first born when I was 18 months old. Decided to come back home and we moved to Knutsford.
Right, okay.
So I lived in Knutsford till I was 9.
Okay.
At which point we moved to a family home in Hartford on Beach Road.
Yeah.
And which is where I grew up and lived there until I left home about, we're gradually 19.
Okay. So do you have siblings?
I do. I have a younger sister.
Okay. Claire.
She still lives in London.
Okay. What's Claire do?
She worked for a charity.
Back.
She's had a series of very cool jobs working in the Commonwealth, and also she's a match, she's a translator and a linguist. And,
okay.
Has a series of jobs that were sort of human justice and environmental justice.
Okay. And does Claire have any kids?
No.
So you've no nephews or
nieces? No nephews or nieces, just two boys. Why?
Yes, of course. I know your two boys. And it's mental, isn't it?
It's absolutely safe. I've perfectly got bags on the back. Two businesses, two boys.
Yeah, hence the coffee.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, yeah, I might as well have an intravenous drip of coffee.
Okay, so born in London, yeah. Moved up to Knutsford, then moved to Hartford.
Yeah.
I know your old family home. That was a lovely home on Beach Road there, just near Burroughs Hill.
Yeah, 3 or 4 doors up from Burroughs.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was a lovely home to grow up in. It was amazing. Went to Hartford High School.
Okay.
Well, it was Hartford Manor. Was 9 when we moved here. So
okay.
Last couple of years of junior school, Hartford Manor. Under the infamous Ray Sharp, who was a legend locally here.
Okay.
He was amazing. A teacher could just, oh, trust her. She interrupted me. So he was amazing, and he sort of got us all way ahead of the game by the time we went to high school. So that's the time we were like pretty well ahead on maths and English and all kind of stuff. Went to Hartford High. And school really was for me. And I really enjoyed school to go to it. I was always sort of looking for something outside of school that sort of ticked my boxes. Always been a really creative person.
Mm-hmm.
Rubbish at art generally, but like music always spoke to me. I was off photography and that kind of thing. So, yeah.
So just backtrack slightly. So you went to Hartford High School. You had a good bunch of mates there?
A small bunch of mates.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what did you do in your sort of early teenage years then in and around Hartford? What were your number two?
Sailing.
Okay.
And rugby were my sort of two big sort of things outside of school.
Went to Satan,
Blizzard Park, which is obviously just down the road from me where I was in Hartford, till I was about 13, 14.
Okay.
And then my old man has always been into sailor racing, basically. So he used to sail a lot of yachts and also dinghy racing. And so he started me off dinghy sailing when I was about 7 or 8 years old. Bought a small dinghy, sailed it at Lee and Logan.
Mm-hmm.
Witness, I mean, they weren't it. And then when we moved here, we joined Budworth, the second tour of Great Budworth, which is amazing.
So that's good as a teenager to have focus, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rather than hanging around the street.
Well, there was never any of that for me. I was never that sort of particularly social kid.
Okay.
And I always had like interests elsewhere. So like I said, music was massive for me. From
listening to it and playing.
I played violin, saxophone, and piano. Started drum kit when I was about 8 years old, and I was obsessed. So, like, I was the kid who was the nerdy kid indoors, just learning and listening to music. obsessed with music from a really young age. And I was in bands from about the age of about 11.
Okay, man.
The pictures of me in Northwich Wine Bar at the age of 9 with a bunch of other 9-year-old mates. And we went in and all the old cast. A few jam nights and stuff. We'd go down there, our parents would take us down at 9, 10 years old. We'd get up on stage. So I'm always into it for a really young age. So that was my major focus, always was.
Okay, so Northwich Wine Bar, is that the bottom end of, was that the bottom end of Whitstreet?
I can't remember what it is.
There's now changed hands about 10 times.
10 times, it's the, you know what we call it.
Yeah, and the statistics play like
it's by Corner Bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was like...
Oh, no, I do know the one you mean, yeah, further around.
And the Ball of Fire, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Just on the end. But yeah, that was like an infamous night spot in the 90s.
Yeah, that.
Oh, we used to go down there. Oh, in fact, it was my drum teacher convinced my mum to let me go with him to the open night, like, because he was running it. And he'd take his drum kit. He's like, you should go.
Oh, what a great guy.
And I was just like, that was me, addicted for life. I'm still learned out being on stage.
So how do you think, talking about Northwich and Hartford, how have you seen it change then if you've been here that long? What sort of change have you seen around Hartford? And
I think the main changes that come to mind are just the expansive growth of the area, generally speaking. I don't want to get my high horse or get all whingy at middle-aged about it, but, you know, lots and lots of new houses. The school seems to have gotten a lot better. That's one thing. Yeah, Hartford High now is a top, top high school. It wasn't a great high school, but,
okay,
particularly. And Hartford was a bit of a mixed area. You had quite a couple of rough areas, like a couple of very affluent areas, whereas now Hartford is very desirable. Everyone wants to be Hartford because it's on the train line to London, it's on the train line to Manchester. Yeah. It's great location, not great schools.
Yeah.
You've got Grey School, Hartford, Halleck, blah, blah. So that's a big thing, but I feel like it's so busy now.
Mm.
The traffic is always horrendous getting through it, and they need to invest in the infrastructure a little bit more.
Yeah.
Doctor's surgery is better.
They do.
Bigger schools, or and schools are all so oversubscribed, trying to get us in the school.
Well, yeah, I mean, they must have been. They built 500 houses in Hartford in the last 5 years.
And what have they done to support that?
Yeah.
It's different somewhere like Whittington.
Yes, because they've
got that little village.
Yeah,
so, and I know that not everyone's happy about that development because people are with development, but at least they've put in some infrastructure to support that additional population. And I think that that's what it needs. But I do think it's become generally a more affluent area. I've always liked Norfolk. It's an interesting place. It's obviously the confluence of two rivers, and that has a certain personality. The Dale and the Weaver come together. And so you've got this very sort of interesting, the town centre, which has got a lot of history and character about it. But then you've got all these satellite towns
around it,
ranging from Weaverham and Ruddy to Barnton, to Davenham and Moulton and Hartford.
Yeah.
And they've all got such different personalities, different feels. One could be really different to another.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it's quite unique. I can't think of that many places who have such diverse, like, satellite towns around the main town.
No, you know. No, it's a very popular place for people to move to, like you said, because you can commute.
It's a glim
by cars.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons
motorways within 10 minutes.
That's it. And that's one of the reasons I love this part of the world. I mean, I haven't always lived here. You know, I was abroad for a couple of years. I lived in Manchester for a number of years.
Okay.
And I lived in Altrincham and Ohio Bars for a number of years. And it was only when we were pregnant with our second kid that we were sort of needed a bigger house or rest of it. We were living in a two up, two down terrace. We were like, well, we need something bigger. Couldn't afford what we wanted in Hale and Ultra. So it was like, well, how far out of Manchester do we need to come to get where we want? And it just logically ended up coming back to sort of where I could work. It wasn't planned that way. It was also the fact my mum and dad from Dayton.
I was going to say, yeah. So just talk us through when you say we, who's the other half?
So Rosie's my wife. We got to 2008, married in 2011. So she grew up in Hale.
Yes, okay.
So getting her out of Hale was quite an effort. She made me promise that if we moved, that if she so much as got the sniff that she wanted to go back within 2 years, then I had to sell her.
You were doing all you could then.
I would make sure. I was desperate to get out of that area, wasn't it? Yeah. For us to be so close to all everything she'd grown up with and all the rest of it. And it was really expensive.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's much better value. Even now, it's not cheap in Dale's market, but it's much better value than Knutsford and Hale.
Almost double the price for a full bedroom detached. And also, you'd never get the land.
No.
We call it an amazing view. The fields that were for you will not get that way.
No, not unless you paid a lot of money.
Massive amount of money, yeah, exactly. And there's a different vibe about it.
Yeah, actually.
Somewhere like Altrincham is very much sort of like looking in on Manchester. it's very much a suburb of the city.
Yes.
Everyone talks about Manchester, that's the city, and you're on the tram line, all the rest. Here, it's very sort of villagey.
Yes.
It's about Davenham.
Yeah.
People don't tend to go that far.
No, but you're close if you want to, aren't you?
But this is why I was...
20 minutes to Altrincham.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
20 minutes to Altrincham, 40 minutes to most city centre.
Yeah.
Good day. A perfect, you know, equal sort of distance to Liverpool. And as you say, the transport network, everything's just banging around here.
Yeah.
But better than that, for me, is the fact that an hour up the road, you're in the Lake District.
Yeah.
An hour east, you're in the Peak District.
Yeah.
An hour west, you're away.
Yeah, yeah.
Or on the coast.
Yeah.
I think it's the best place in the UK.
Well, I agree. As you know, I grew up in Blackpool, and that's very much you sort of one road in, one road down.
You kind of on a little bit.
You are, so you can't. I think you've got family up there.
I did, yeah. Well, my dad grew up there.
Preston.
He grew up in Preston, then Blackpool.
Right, okay.
And my grandparents lived in Blackpool for 55 years.
Yeah, wow.
Well, that was only 2 years ago. So my granddad died. My nan moved down here. She was in Norfolkshire.
Right, okay.
So yeah, I've got strong connections with Blackpool. I was in Blackpool my whole
time. A lot, yeah. But you can't get very quick. You've got half an hour to get out of the M6
yeah.
before you can go anywhere.
Exactly.
Whereas here, you're so well connected to a lot. Just whatever you want to do.
Exactly. You wake up on Saturday morning, the weather's nice. It's like, when?
Yeah. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that's for me, aside from the convenience from like a work perspective, be able to get about like Manchester, Liverpool, Chester, whatever, it's the fact that I can get away to it and go somewhere nice.
Yeah. Okay, so while that now we're talking about this then, just talk me through what you do in your sort of social time, sort of in and around Northwich and the wider Cheshire area. What are your favourite things to do?
I don't have a huge amount of social time. I run two businesses and I've got two kids, so I do work long hours because I love what I do. To be honest, it's not that much of a chore. I do love it. But when I can, me and Rosie and I love getting out and eating out and theatre of Manchester, going to cinema. That kind of stuff. We tend to go out quite a lot, Chester and so Altrincham.
Okay.
Because we spent 8 years living in Altrincham.
Okay.
We know Altrincham very well. We tend to have a lot of favourite restaurants.
So talk me through some of your favourite restaurants. The market for
it's a lunch
breakfast.
Although I have to say, the new food market at Chester
is
better than the Altrincham one.
Oh, I've not been.
It's a...
Whereabouts is that?
It's where the old market was next to the town.
Oh, all right.
Clearly, we don't open it in November.
To the right, as you're looking at it, there's a land.
If you come up to the cathedral, you're on the square there, it's just open to the right.
Yes.
Next to the playground.
Yes, I know what you mean, yes.
Absolutely awesome. Amazing artisanal independent suppliers, but they've also got a stage for like music. They've got like a whole sort of open sort of market area for morning breakfasts and all that kind of stuff. And then you've got this massive trestle seating area and some really cool shops there as well. I love Altrincham Market, but it's become a bit, it's very expensive.
It is.
Very difficult to get a seat.
Yeah.
It's a bit Instagram worthy, whereas actually used to be a bit kind of like genuine.
It did, yeah.
And I'm quite keen now, popping into Chester.
I might well try that.
The other place, there's some amazing places in Altrincham as well. There's a little pasta place called Sugo.
Yeah.
It's probably our favourite one.
Not me. My brother-in-law and sister-in-law and live in Altrincham, whether we need to go.
We've got to do.
Alex, my wife, went. Let's read the mum, I think. And yeah, I believe it's very good.
It's difficult to imagine how good a bowl of pasta can be.
Yeah.
Especially like 18 quid. Like, I could do a host.
Yeah. No.
It's amazing.
And I've had sushi at the Con Club.
Con Club's decent.
I know you like a bit of sushi.
I love sushi. I wish we got sushi.
Yeah, that's the thing we need.
That's the thing when you come out into the country a little bit. You don't have that, I want sushi at 4 a.m. on a Tuesday. Yeah. Ability to call someone to deliver it to your door, you know. You're a bit limited with that kind of stuff, right? But what you lose in that, and you gain in your country.
Pace of life.
And your pace of life. And greenery and the walks around here.
Yeah, yeah. And
all that kind of stuff. So yeah, Sugo's great. Coulter's a great restaurant.
What about the Nag's Head at Halton? You been there? Because that's owned by Altrincham Market.
Is it now?
Yeah.
Nag's Head, where's that?
Halton, Burstow.
Oh, no.
You know the old school house we sold?
Is that where we went?
You for a fight
after we did New York?
No, that was the yew tree.
Right.
The yew tree inn at Spurstone. No, Bunbury. Yeah. So where Newell Farm was, and you go past it, and you're into Halton, and there's a pub there.
We know that.
Called the Nag's Head, and it's been bought by the people who own Altrincham Market. So it's Altrincham Market food in a pub, an English pub.
And it's what, 15 minutes?
Yeah, 20, 25 probably, but yeah, still it's... We've not been yet, but it's because it's 25 minutes away, you've...
You're on the hit there.
Yeah, so I'm going to go there one Sunday.
Sounds like a very good idea.
Okay, so just before we move on, talk to me about Rosie's Beef Wellington.
Yeah. So my birthday on Sunday, I got last meal rights, whatever I wanted. And Rosie does a mean beef Wellington. We found this recipe. It's amazing. There's a restaurant in London called The Pie Rooms. I'd seen, I've got his cookbook, I've seen his Wellington there, and he does it, but differently. And I tried to ask Rosie. She absolutely knocked it apart. You saw the pictures.
I did, yeah.
It was just amazing. I was amazed. We had my mum and dad and my nan around, so I'm a sister, so there was like 8 of us, and we just smashed it.
Right, I saw your sister walking up the road with your mum. I wondered who that was, because your mum is very recognisable,
yeah,
because of her hair colour.
Yeah, it's bright orange hair. I've done and wonders around there, but this is like becoming the mad old lady.
Don't believe that. Oh, yeah, well, that's good, good. So if you're ever in London, the Pie Room is the place to be out.
It's one of the places, I mean.
Don't you just didn't say it's in. No, you're pointing.
No, it's in, yeah. Hoban,
right, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I've not been yet. I've just seen his work and seen the recipe, but I haven't obviously eaten some of his recipes. Knock out. If you can get in, Wednesdays is apparently the day.
It's Wellington Wednesdays.
Yeah. It's not on the menu, but you have to just know.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very special.
Good. Okay, so talk to me a bit about the business side of things. Yeah, we're sat here in your office in Blakemere Village.
Yeah.
Yeah? So you run two companies.
To run two businesses. I've run an events company called UTC Events since 2007. It's a Manchester-based events company, and we specialise in corporate entertainment, corporate production, and management of events. So we light, sound, entertainment, and all kind of elements of like events. So we do about 250-300 events a year, mm-hmm. 6 full-time staff who work for Pona, thanks to the pandemic, me. That works for us.
So, 2007, you started just before the GFC.
Yeah, I did. So, and I built a business through it. And I didn't know anything different.
No.
To be honest with you.
No.
I was just young and energetic and full of excitement for a new product. I hadn't really ever got my teeth into anything. I was 25. I'd never really got my teeth into anything sort of career-wise. I'd had a few little businesses. I started a business. So I was abroad for 2 years. I used to work as a sailing instructor, the yacht instructor in Greece.
That sounds awful.
Don't know why I ever came home. Right, honestly, the best thing. It was just amazing. Rich people used to pay me to skip an end.
Oh, wow.
It was just ridiculous. It was amazing. Anyway, so I did 2 years.
Are you aiming today?
No. Look at us. I'd be great. I did a year in Greece. I did a year in Spain doing that. And then my conscience got the better of me. And I went home and went to university. I studied business at Portsmouth University. Mm-hmm. However, as a budding musician, the music scene down there wasn't all that. Just as amazing for music. But a lot of musical chums around here were just like, why the hell are you going to Portsmouth? And you just spent 2 years abroad and said you'd be back. And I've gone. And I was under pressure and I quit uni after two years.
Okay.
I'll take to that. It wasn't for me. I'm not particularly academic in that respect. I'm a doer. So I quit to become a rock star. It kind of worked for a few years. I did some amazing stuff. I worked as a freelance musician, did some amazing stuff, touring and all that kind of stuff. And at the same time, alongside it, I set up a business teaching drums. I was a drum teacher.
Yes.
So I had a place in Greenbank.
Yes.
Studio in Greenbank, all the shops there.
Yes. I've had a few clients that you've taught their kids drums.
Oh, really?
I've spoken to.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I pretty much taught anybody who was drums in.
Anybody who pick up a stick.
For about 5 years, I was the guy.
Yeah.
When everyone came to me. And at one point, I had like 36 students a week, one-to-one. But you know what? Quite honestly, objectively, I'm not a teacher.
No.
And I want to do
it. It's a certain type of person, isn't it?
Ultimate respect.
I'll learn to say, yeah.
I really do. It's just not for me.
No.
However, I seem to get sucked into that sort of sector. So I'm not into the private tuition, but a mate of mine was a lecturer at Mid-Cheshire College, obviously no longer here. In Hartford, and there was a job going. So I wasn't a trained teacher, but the way it worked in further education was you could get a job as long as you were training.
Okay.
To become a teacher.
Okay.
You could be a teacher. So I did that. I got a job at Mid Cheshire College lecturing in music.
Okay.
I was doing music improvisation, music industry. I was doing composition, a few different things.
So that was sort of mid-noughties.
That would be.
Yeah, early noughties.
2008.
Okay. So it's once you started the UTC.
So to start at the same time,
you did both the same thing.
Taking the piss in this job because I was teaching and then I was using their laptop. And I was like, yeah, kids, just get on with it. And I was working on this business.
Okay.
Trying this business. At the same time, I had a job as a barman at the Bowling Green.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was working in the Reaper Graphics Department at the Grange School.
Wow.
I was working like 20 hours a day just trying to get his business off the ground. I was obsessed with it. And basically what happened was I was in loads of bands and stuff, and one of my best mates said, can you put a band together for my wedding? I was like, I'm a real musician. I don't do weddings. So I put a band together with my mates and we went to this wedding. It was amazing. Everyone danced, everyone screamed for war. We had the time of our lives. I haven't got paid. I was like, I could do something with this.
Which is a business.
So I did, and it snowballed. First year we did 8 weddings, the year after 15, the year after 35, the year after 60, and then we do Under the Covers is still one for products for UTC events, and we do have 200 shows a year just with that band. There's a roster of 120 musicians. It's just a big operation. So that was the genesis of UTC. It went from being a band into an events company.
Okay. So you, obviously early on in that business was 2008, the financial crash.
Yep.
Do you think that you learned things because you started a business then that you've carried forwards in terms of being frugal maybe? Or
well, I think
why didn't it cost?
Quite honestly, I think because I just started a business, it was a Bain business. I had no real business experience. I'm not proper business experience by that point. I don't think I really noticed it. I think my naivety towards what was doing, I mean, I knew what was going on, but I didn't know any different now in terms of the business.
That's
I never saw it in good times. And I managed to build the business through it.
I think that's very interesting because I think a lot of people now, with all the doom and gloom in the media, will believe the hype, they worry about things. And really, if you just focus on what you're doing,
just do your thing,
then you can't control the outside world, can you? All you can do.
Only worry about things you can worry about.
Yeah. So whatever the economy is doing, or Russia, or, you know, the financial crash that might happen or might not, ignore and do what you're doing.
Cards you'd be presented with, how are you going to do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to sit back and go, it's because of this that everything's done wrong? Or are you going to just do something? And I think I very much, it wasn't so much that mindset back then, although I do have that now, particularly with the pandemic. But with the financial crash 2008, it was very much just a case of, I was playing drums, I was getting paid for.
You were loving it.
I was young, I was fairly free and easy at that point. Rosie and I just got together, life was great. And I just wanted to be a success. And I had finally found something that was obsessed with. And you know what it's like, when you become obsessed with that thing in business, it's no longer working.
No, it's not.
It's just your existence.
You live and breathe it, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
And that's what it was like for me. And 70-hour weeks. And, you know, at the beginning when I was doing the band, I was running everything myself. So I'd get up at 8 in the morning, I'd go and hire a van, I'd go to the storage unit, I'd load it up with a tons worth of equipment, I'd go and pick up people, I'd drive to Brighton, I'd set it all up, I'd sound engineer, I'd play drums in it, I'd deal with the client, I'd do the opposite, come back at 6 a.m, having done a 20-hour day, take the van back next word, sleep the next day, and I just love it.
Yeah.
I'd die.
Yeah.
But back then, some enthusiasm and energy.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I started my first company in 2006. I'm similar age to you, so I was the same the early couple of years with the worst financial crash in history, but you don't think like that.
Not when,
at the time.
Not when you're yours and hungry.
You don't.
And also that the liability isn't...
True, if you don't have kids, you might have mortgage.
You lose your house.
No, I mean, yeah, or about...
Like, you know, you're in financial debt with your company.
No, like, so no one say be careless, but I think a lot of those things you can bring forward to now.
Don't believe everything you read.
No.
That is for sure.
No.
If you only just listen to the news, you'd never do anything. No. Never leave the heart.
No.
But actually, if we really acknowledged all the dangers around us in our every day, whether they be physical ones or emotional ones or financial ones, you would do nothing.
No, you wouldn't.
You'd have to get up and do something.
Yeah.
That's what we're employing.
Okay. So, UTC went well. The reason we know each other is through your media business. Yeah. So when did that all start?
So basically what happened was I was always a bit of a hobbyist, a photographer, loved photography, but never did anything professionally other than going and sort of taking iPhone shots of the events that we were running. And obviously I was flat out running this events business. And then 2020, pandemic, and we're in the event sector. I mean, just fell over. We were sat there in the office on the 14th of March, I'll never forget it, you know, 3 days before Boris effectively sent everyone home. And I said to everyone, I'm just not happy with you, you need to go home. And I don't know what we're going to do. I remember exactly what I said. I said, I don't know what's going to happen, but we're a team, and I'd rather we all suffered a bit rather than any of us suffering a lot. Let's see what happens. Go home, we'll work. We figured out Microsoft Teams, whatever. I tried, but the sector fell over in Ireland. You know, we lost 80% of our turnover in 2012.
80% of your turn.
80% of the turn. And so it was like someone tried to tap.
So what did you actually do? Did you take advantage of the furlough scheme? Did you?
So we had to, we basically put UTC, the events committee, into sort of a cryogenically frozen
hibernation. Yeah.
We stopped everything we could. I ended up relinquishing. We had a beautiful 2,000-square-foot office on Deansgate in Manchester. Massive tall ceiling. It was like something out of Apple. It was an amazing place. That's how I wrote all that. I managed to get through it without losing any staff, thanks to the furlough scheme and thanks to starting a new business, which we'll come on to. But it was. I still feel like I'm going through some element of something, like some post-traumatic. It was the hardest thing I've ever been through. And it made me confront my professional mortality in a way I've never experienced or thought I had to. Made me realise after 13 years at the time of giving my absolute blood and guts to something, it could be taken away like that.
Horrendous.
And it was just like really hard to bear. And I got through it. And you, in those situations, you knuckle down and you do what you've got to do. I think now looking back on it, you realise how much that took out of you. I have little grey hairs or because
yeah.
Norris.
So
at that time, I was the primary breadwinner.
I was just going to say, so Rosie's
very successful in sort of commercial sales.
Yeah,
she's a sales director of an amazing company, Altrium. But rewind the clock a few years, she was only 3 days a week and not quite so senior in the company. The company was a lot smaller at that point, and I was the primary breadwinner in the house, and it's all of a sudden like, what are we going to do? So, but yeah, like anything was on the table. We might have lost the house or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was private.
Mm-hmm.
So we make the decision. She had the opportunity then in the pandemic to go up to full time and take promotion effectively. So we just sort of had the pragmatic conversation like, which horse do we back here? I've been for the last 10 years, it's all been about my business. You know what? Let's back your career for a bit here, because that seems like the best option for us. So we did. At the time, didn't know what was going to happen with me. And obviously, when the business stopped and everyone was furloughed, I couldn't sit around doing nothing. So I decided, I'd always wanted to see if I could commercialize my photography.
Okay.
I have this habit of monetizing my creative skills, which is good in one way, but in the other way, it kind of steals the joy out in a lot of ways, because all of a sudden, you're no longer doing it for joy, you're doing it for a time. So you're no longer in charge of the output.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not complaining. I'm very fortunate to work in a creative industry, but it is a bit different. So anyway, I would wanted to monetize photography, and so that's what I did. And I started going to get commercial clients, because more than ever during the pandemic, people needed content, because they no longer had a physical shop. Everything was online. They needed great marketing material. They needed promotional material. And we've become specialists in creating promotional material for businesses, whether it's marketing for ongoing services or just promotional material, just case studies, whatever it might be. That's what we're really good at. And that's partly, mainly because of my commercial experience in business, knowing what other businesses need.
Yeah, okay.
Well,
okay.
Whereas I think a lot of media specialists, they just think about the media. But I think what's unique about us is I've had 15 years running successful businesses. I know what businesses need. And I'm not interested in the private sector. I just want to work for businesses.
Yeah.
And Mondays, Friday. I haven't worked at events for several years. Never been home in evenings and weekends.
Yeah.
For me, like, I'm 9 to 5 doing this.
Yeah.
So works. But for me, that is like a massive change.
Yes.
My kids.
Yeah.
For my wife.
It's, yeah.
You know, but it's a game changer. So yeah, we started this. I started taking photos, and it was kind of a temporary fix at the time. Something to earn some money whilst we didn't know what was happening with UTC. And then quite almost by accident, it's grown. And we have 3 staff members now. We're about to employ 4. We've got an amazing suite of services. We've got an amazing group of clients. And it's all going in the direction that I'm really happy with. And as a consequence to that, I've realized that UTC is a good analogy would be. UTC is like a teenager that doesn't need my one-to-one care every day.
That's good.
I've got amazing teams that run that business effectively. And, you know, metaphorically speaking, I sort of stick my head around the door and so he can move off the road.
Yeah, do behind me. That's good. That's a good business.
One day a week I do on UTC effectively. Or the whole team actually come here on the third, because they'll work from home. So on Thursdays, the 6 was in here.
Okay.
We'll work together. We don't have meetings in it. We can do that during the week on team.
Yeah, okay.
This is just for being together.
Yeah, that's nice.
Overhearing each other's conversations.
Yeah.
How's your dad? What's up? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Former team.
That.
Bond a tip. That's all your Thursday. But the tip UGC effectively doesn't need me that much. So it's allowed me to do, and by contrast, MPM is like a baby or a toddler that needs my constant attention. And I'm really enjoying that world, going back to doing the creative thing that I started doing. Because with UTC, I started doing the creative thing. I was behind the drums every day doing my job. And I managed myself out of that role to a point where I was sat at a desk pushing paper.
Yeah.
And I'm actually doing any job. There's no point in the creative industry, because you can become a millionaire out of the creative industry. But with MPN, I'm with a camera in my hand for a lot of time.
Yeah.
Less than I'd like to, but.
Well, you know, Scott.
I've got Scott, who you obviously you know very well. Scott does a lot of the stories and content. And I'm jealous of the time he gets to go and do it. Being on the ground doing the stuff with photos is what it's all about. And I'm working hard as we grow this business now to make sure I don't do the same I did with UTC and manage myself out of the fun.
Yeah.
I want to be a creative. I'm never happier than when I've got a camera in my hand or a pair of drumsticks in my hand. That's what I like doing. So I'm going to make sure that as this business grows, I think I'll put management and admin staff in place
okay.
and allow me to still be part of creativity.
Okay, so it sounds like it's going well. You must have some challenges like any small business owner does.
Oh, do 100%.
I know it took you a while to find Scott, for example.
Finding someone with that skill set, I mean, I wanted a videographer, a great filmmaker, who was also a very competent photographer in a number of different disciplines, using flash photography, off-camera flash stuff, natural lifestyle stuff, working with people, portraits, product photography, real estate, you know, all these different elements and disciplines that we did. Finding that, plus someone who's not a dickhead.
No, yeah, he's a nice guy.
It was my first employee for the company, and that first hire is just everything. That's your right-hand person.
Yeah.
I think I've told you, I interviewed upwards of 25 people.
Yeah, you did.
Until I found Scott. I mean, Scott's amazing, great part of the team. And I'd say we're looking to find the next Scott.
So who are the other two on the team? There's three on the team, you said.
So there's Naomi, who does all sort of finance and admin, and then we've got Joel, who does all the podcast production.
Okay.
I don't think we've had any of
No, I've not. Is this the podcast recording area here?
Yeah, as you can see, just behind the camera, we've got that's where we do all our podcast reports.
It's a much more pro setup than my, my iPhone.
Hey, whatever works. The great thing about podcasting, the entry level's pretty.
Yeah, well, it's very good. But usually,
do you know what I mean?
I am Middle East tech person.
Doesn't it? People don't need to. I think that's right. We actually we recorded a podcast yesterday, starting on talking about this very thing. In fact, I'll show you this amazing new pizza kit, which you will love because it's not techy at all. But it's for podcasting and all sorts of on-site location.
Okay.
Amazing tech. Very, very cool.
Very good.
But what it does is it gives... Why shouldn't anybody else take a photo or
podcast? Of course, yeah.
And I think it's a good thing that this access point gets low. And what it does do is the likes of me and Scott, who are media creators, it makes come out. How do you differentiate? It makes something better than everyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because everyone can do it doesn't mean can't do it well.
No, of course.
It's the same with photography.
Well, I mean,
you have a camera, but can you be a professional top-end photographer?
Some of the photos you see, going the right move, you think, could definitely do better with your iPhone.
No doubt.
Easily, couldn't you?
We offer it, sending some of the...
We do, yes. Things.
Not full punk.
No. Good. Okay. Well, that was a very interesting chat, Adam.
It was.
It's been nice to find out a bit more about you.
Well, yeah, you've got my life history. But yeah, I think your challenges, as you say, you know, there are always challenges that persist. Growing pains, particularly.
Yeah.
Small business.
Yeah.
You know, how do you take that to a level?
Yeah. It's getting first
level.
I was going to say it's getting from 2 or 3 in the team to 8 or 9, 10.
Yeah.
Hell of a thing.
It's a massive deal. And also, like, having been through that with your business and what that took out of me personally, I'm not even sure that's quite what I want to do.
No, you've got to ask yourself that question, haven't you?
It's not a vanity. It's not like, I've got 10 people to work for.
No.
It's
just it can be. Some people want a business that they don't work in, which you could do, can't you? Like UTC.
Yeah.
Or some people don't want that. They want to be doing the active day-to-day.
I know.
It's finding that balance.
I think definitely, particularly sort of turning 40 as we are, you know, like, you start to weigh up a little bit why you do things, what you're doing it for. Is it purely just to earn a crust?
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing this for your future? Mm-hmm. Are you doing it for your kids? Are you doing it because you love doing it?
Yeah.
Is it because you're awful if you didn't have something to do?
Yeah.
And these sort of things come into it. And I think, you know, we could all get hit by a bus tomorrow.
Yeah.
No idea what the future holds.
No.
Wake up every day and do something that you love if you can. I think we can both say we're really fortunate that we get to do.
Yeah, we
get not many people, not a lot of people get to the Loveford job.
Very, very few, yeah.
I still, for all these years, I bounce out of bed.
Yeah.
And I want to go and do this thing.
It's, but also when you get into your 40s, you sort of have one eye on where, well, how much longer you might work for.
Well, that's it. And you don't know with how long you'll want to do it.
No, you don't. You might get to 50 and want to carry on. You might get to 60 and want to carry on.
I know. I think you know, everyone has that as well. I want to retire as soon as possible.
Yeah, but then do you? Yeah. You don't retire yet.
I definitely don't.
God, I always do.
I've got too much fun to laugh.
Yeah. Or it's having a business where you could, if you want to.
Yeah.
When you get to that stage. That'd be the nice thing.
Yeah. That would be, yeah. And I'm taking stock of my business portfolio and where it's all going just because of what we've been through the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Things are very different.
Yeah.
Where it was pre-pandemic, we were flying in one very, very nice direction.
It's just him.
And, you know, the events company, whilst we survived, we didn't lose any staff. It's lumbered us with a lot of debt, the pandemic, and managing that and surviving. It's just a different... I don't know what was
the one over there, but it is.
So deciding what to do with that. And also, you know, I just feel that the opportunities we've got with NPM, it's a young company, but we've barely scratched the surface of what we want to do. And I'm sort of blinded by too many opportunities.
Okay.
Well, actually, what do we want to do?
Yeah.
We've narrowed that down. I said to you, we love working with you guys, working on real estate stuff. It's varied and work with great people, and it's exciting trying to always push the boundaries and always do something new and be better than everyone else.
Since, yeah.
That's, I always get a kick out of them.
Yeah.
I don't want to be just another one.
No.
I want to be different.
Yeah, you've also got to realise that people are copying us now, and that's just flattery, isn't it? It's a compliment, but because of you, you've got to keep on evolving and do the next step.
Yeah, we have a lot of chaps, don't we, about how we move forward the media that we create.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
So what's next?
Yeah.
How about this? How would this work? With this work? And that's how you always stay out of
that. And consistency, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
That's where a lot of small businesses, well, even big businesses, fall down, don't they? You've got to do the same thing for every single client, every step.
I think what's lovely, I think about the way the stories market stuff as well, is that you don't even need to see the stories logo to know it's a story.
You're doing it, and that's
like the consistency.
Yes.
You know what the videos look like, you know what the photos look like, you know how the copy is, you know how you present, it's all down to one lines, you know.
And that's the team.
That
comes from the top, but it's the team that
everyone buys.
Execute it.
Exactly. And that's like any good business.
Yeah.
Any good business. That's where the fun comes.
Cool. Cool. Yeah. Bye. Great chat. Thank you.
No worries at all. All right.
That's great, yeah.
Blended.
Bye.
Bye-bye.